What is up, everyone? Welcome back to our little podcast here at Fandango. My name is Eric Davis, and joining me, as always, is Sean O'Connell. And Sean,
Sir.
Pacific Rim comes out this weekend. This is a big movie. A lot of people, there's a ton of chatter about this film online right now. Some people are saying that if it doesn't do better than Grown Ups 2, all or, quote-unquote original sci-fi blockbusters over the summer are going to be ruined, and we're never going to see a movie like this again. And, I mean, that's one of the funny things about summer movies is that everything is just – is up to the 10th degree,
Right.
People are making a big deal out of this film. We've both seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start off with our reactions to the film. We're not going to spoil anything. Let's not spoil anything for anybody. So you could listen to this if you haven't seen Pacific Rim yet. And don't worry, we're not going to spoil. But we will give you enough information, I think, to help you decide whether or not this is a movie you want to see.
All right. My party line on Pacific Rim is that it is – it's the greatest summer blockbuster that I've seen this year. It's the best summer blockbuster I've seen this year.
Wow.
It is head and shoulders to me above Iron Man 3, above White House Down, above Lone Ranger, obviously, Man of Steel. All these films that tried to deliver on spectacle, I think that it beats them hands down, delivering the most massive action set pieces that we've seen yet on screen to date this summer season. However, I will just sort of couch that by saying that doesn't really make it a great movie. And when I step back and try and think, like, is it going to make my top 10? No, it wouldn't necessarily make it for a couple of different reasons. It's corny, it's a little bit cheesy in a way that big summer blockbuster type movies, I don't know if it's that they should be this way or that we've just come to expect them to be this way. I mean, it's really cliched, and it follows a lot of these things that we have seen in other big blockbuster movies. It's funny, we talked about Independence Day, and it resonated to me in a couple of ways where it tries to be really heroic and rah, 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 and that works because you just plug into it for the moment. But it has faults. It has things that would prevent me from really saying that, across the board, it could appeal to any type of movie audience. I think it really, if you're paying to see a movie where massive skyscraper-sized robots beat the tar out of, creatures that come out of the ocean, then you're going to get everything you've ever wanted for in that type of movie.
Yeah, I completely agree with, I think, everything you just said. I think it delivers, in terms of summer spectacle, this movie delivers like gangbusters. It's the best of all of them. It takes a really intriguing original concept, and then it injects a lot of familiar movie cliches into it. Right. And so you have to kind of and there's a balance there, and I think that they probably had to do that, So you have this really interesting world building here of these monsters and these big robot kind of I call them like, 1,000 times the size of Iron Man because,
right.
Each one has two people in it. And I really like that the mythology that each people have to sync up their mind and their memories and
right.
and all of that stuff in order to control the robot as one person, so to speak. And so that kind of element of it, that original concept, that it's very intriguing, it's very interesting, and you can talk a lot about it. Then again, they have like the guy that that failed at his job before and needs another shot, you have a lot of kind of action movie cliches in there. The tough militant sergeant, who kind of at the last minute has to step up and, and help people fight, like Bill Pullman did in Independence Day. The president, he got into his war suit and he went and fought the alien. So a lot of those blockbuster cliches are in this film. And that's why I think a lot of people walk out of it and they're like, original? What are you talking about? Original? It's got all these familiar cliches, but the overall concept of it is original and it's really interesting. And I think it's a satisfying movie, exactly like you said. If you're going in looking to enjoy giant robots beating giant monsters up, and those fights between those robots and monsters, unlike Transformers, which when I watch them, a lot of people are comparing this to Transformers
right.
when they watch the commercials. A lot of my friends at home who don't, you know, obsessively watch trailers have come to me and they said, it's like Transformers, right? But Transformers, I feel like when I watch those battle sequences, I can't see anything. I can't distinguish the robots from the other robots. I don't know who I'm rooting for. I just see silver and blue metal clinking all over the place. Pacific Rim really sort of draw, you know, it's you can see these fights and you can invest in them. And yeah, a lot of them take place at night. And I think probably because they had to in order to keep the budget down. But
and a huge one takes place underwater.
Yeah.
Like the last one takes place underwater. And I really feared that I was not – like you, I was going to have a hard time figuring out what's going on. But I didn't have that problem at all.
No. And that's what I really like about the film. And that's what distinguishes it from those Transformers movies. So if you like – if you see those Transformers movies and you like big brawls but those are a little bit messy for you, you'll really like the brawls in this. The monsters are defined. They're interesting. They all have a unique thing about them,
right,
that you almost want to see explored more, but you don't have time because they're just out there and you got to kill it. But each monster has its own unique kind of sort of way to it, and I like it, and I think it's interesting, and I think, like I actually said this when I wrote about it, you know, it's you almost watch this movie envisioning the two hands of 11-year-old boys kind of above it all having these monsters fight, because that's what it feels like. It feels like a movie that's injected into the fantasies of a small boy or girl, and this is what they've always wanted to see on the big screen.
The conversation that I was having with a group of people, you know, leading up to it is, you know, they showed these clips of these massive robots. There's one clip of a Jaeger. The Jaegers are the robots that the humans can control in the future in order to fight these kaiju monsters that come out of the ocean. And there's a clip of a Jaeger fighting a kaiju, and the Jaeger gets thrown, you know, a great distance and crashes through a bridge. And you look at it from the scope of to try and just see how big these robots really are. But watching these sequences, you know, people who are on the fence who were kind of like, look, I'm only interested in this because Guillermo del Toro's name is attached to it. And I've liked what he's done in the past through the Hellboy movies or through smaller films that did like The Devil's Backbone or even with Blade 2 or something like that. So what happened with me when I finally got to see Pacific Rim was seeing those action sequences in the context. More than any of the other films that I've seen so far this summer, I did care about the characters, and I was interested in who was in that fight. Like when you talk about with the Transformers films, you don't really know who's fighting who, and it's really metal on metal. But I think it was a great decision by Del Toro to come up with a concept where there's humans associated with these robot creatures, because when we got to that sequence where the Jaeger is dragging a ship, a tanker, to use as a baseball bat against a kaiju – when you saw it as just a standalone clip, you were like, God, that looks so badass. He's using a tanker as a baseball bat. But then in the context of it, there's a fight where there's two kaiju and one of them gets defeated and he's got to go after the other one. And I was totally invested in him going after the other one. It wasn't just, oh, man, that looks really cool. It was like, hey, there are actual stakes here. And I'm way more invested in this than I was in can Tony Stark or Pepper Potts, you know, defeat this glowing guy I don't know, wherever they were fighting. Oh, it's not a warehouse. It was like a shipyard or something like that. It just felt like the stakes were higher. There was more of a human element, which I didn't expect out of Pacific Rim. And that's why I'm putting it above the other blockbusters we've seen this year, because it gave me characters that I could invest in on a surface level. I'm not comparing this to, you know, an Oscar contender, but I did really care for the characters and the stakes that they had to engage in, because I thought the movie did a really good job of keep building the world and to show how if these guys fail, you know, it's really going to be bad for our planet, for humanity, for the existing civilization. And I don't think any other blockbuster has done as good a job as Pacific Rim does in setting that up.
No, they haven't. And I'll say that the characters and some people have been, you know, some critics have been attacking the characters, saying that they're empty and they're not very well defined and sort of like that. They're a little bit emotionless. But my counter to that is that look at the setting of this film. And I look at a film like The Matrix, Right. And I say those characters are very similar. They're sort of unemotional and kind of hardened, and you don't get a lot out of them. But look at where they are. Their backs are against the wall. The human race is about to be defeated. These aren't people who are going to kind of go on a date and, you know, and find out, you know, what's your favorite color? You know, these are people that are literally every waking minute of their lives are trying to survive. Right. And I think that sort of does a certain thing to a character, and you have to accept that as a moviegoer. You have to accept that, okay, maybe I'm not going to get the most out of this character that I would from another film, but I accept that because of the stakes that they're up against, and I'll take what I can get out of them while they're going off and trying to, you know, defend the Earth. And, right. You know, one of the most interesting thing about Pacific Rim, and I wrote about this over at movies.com, is that it may just predict the future of the summer blockbuster, because here we have a film that's got an international cast of names that are kind of familiar. Some are, some aren't. And it's the storyline is also very international. It's the whole world is coming together. You have a team of Jaegers from Russia. You have a team operating a Jaeger from Hong Kong. You have a team from the U.S. You know, right. So it's kind of like the Olympics of the summer blockbuster. And I like that. I like a blockbuster that's not just about go America, go Team USA. This is like the world, and I feel like in an age where the international box office is becoming very popular, and in an age where a lot of the world is kind of at conflict, we sort of need these films that bring us together and say, look, if things went down as a world, as a planet, we can come together and defeat a common enemy. You know what I'm right. saying? I think we need movies like that. We need movies kind of that show the teamwork and that it is possible to achieve that.
No, I think that's true. And, you know, one thing I'm going to say about Pacific Rim also is that it's fun. I thought it was fun. And we haven't been able to say that about a lot of blockbusters this summer. There's always some sort of an element, like, you know, World War Z was an Armageddon type situation. Iron Man 3 was saying it wanted to go with a darker sort of scenario. I don't think that Del Toro wants to go dark. I think he loves the monsters, and he loves the fact that he created these Jaegers to go after them. And there is this sort of setup. Like, it's funny that you talked about, it's like, you know, the Olympics where the next match keeps – they have these scientists, one of them played by Charlie Day, who they keep saying that we're heading towards a scenario where it's not just going to be one kaiju coming out of the ocean. It's going to be two, and then it might be three, and the stakes keep getting higher and higher. But in a way that they're stacking the odds against the heroes, and we have to find new ways for them to persevere, and we cheer for them in that way. And I thought that Del Toro does a great job of getting the audience swept up in that enthusiasm. It has a really heroic score to it. Like, every time the action sort of kicked in, it did sort of get your fist pumping, and you want it. And I had two different examples of last night in our screening where the crowd started ripping into applause when the Jaegers figured out a way to beat the kaiju. And so I had a lot of fun with it as a theater-going experience. And that's one thing, too, about Pacific Rim that sort of disappoints me. Maybe we can touch on this, too, because for the first hour of it, I was thinking, like, my God, I can't wait to bring my 9-year-old son to this. He needs to see this world on screen. And then it got a little bit scary. Then it got a little bit more terrifying, where the kaiju were in the cities and really wrecking havoc. And it got to teeter to that point where I might not bring them. But I don't know how this is going to translate to DVD. I don't know if you catch it on cable one night, you know, if you're going to really be as into it, because the cliches might overwhelm it a bit. It's one of these movies where I saw it on the IMAX and I saw it in 3D, and that's how Del Toro, I think, wanted it to be seen, as big as possible. And I wonder, do you think it might lose a little bit of its luster when it's translated to your TV screen at home?
Yeah, it might. It definitely might. This is a film that, and I've said this to anybody that's asked me about it, I said, see it on the biggest screen possible. I mean, it's a movie about giants battling each other. It needs to be seen on a big screen. And I mean, that's one thing I do love about the film, is because we don't get enough movies these days that you need to see on the big screen. And as a supporter of going to the movies, I think that we need more movies that make you want to go to the movies. This is a tradition that we need to keep alive in the age of the internet, in the age of everybody watching things on their phones. So yeah, Pacific Rim will definitely be a better experience for you as a moviegoer if you watch it on the big screen versus watching it on your iPhone 6 months from now. But I think that there, it's see it on the big screen. We'll say that. Yes, it's going to lose a little bit. So a lot of these blockbusters lose a little bit of luster when they go to your screen, but your TV. But I mean, then again, if you got one of these, my buddy Peter Hall writes, he's got this giant setup in his house with the surround sound and the 3D. And, you know, if you have one of those TVs, then yeah, you may not lose that much. But if you're going to go watch Pacific Rim on your laptop on a flight in 6 months, I don't know if you'll enjoy it as much as you would if you saw it on IMAX 3D. And by the way, if you see it Thursday, 10 o'clock shows in IMAX 3D, you'll get this really wicked print that IMAX came out with too. So go to IMAX and you'll find out all the theaters where you can pick that up. It's really cool. I was saying that no other movie has inspired the kind of art that Pacific Rim has inspired in the last few weeks, from fans to regular artists. I've seen the most beautiful posters and art just for Pacific Rim, and it's another thing that not a lot of people are talking about. But yeah, the art of this for this movie has just been incredible.
Well, and because it's a beautiful movie to look at, it's not this sort of, although it's a lived-in sort of beaten-down future version of our planet. There's this neon glow and all the technology that the government has to use to run the Jaegers. It's a bright, vivid, I don't want to go to Blade Runner necessarily. It's got a different feel to that, but it looks gorgeous. And there are so many different times where I was just like, oh, look at that. I just want that as like a print on my wall, because Del Toro's a master. The way he uses color and the way he uses these futuristic hues and tones, I thought it looked fantastic. Another reason to see it big. But I can't emphasize enough that when he gets into the battle sequences, like you said, he knows how to pull back. He knows exactly where to put his camera so that you don't feel like you're immersed and lost in the world. You definitely understand what's going on. He does the best job so far this summer. We touched on Lone Ranger, and there were a couple of sequences where Lone Ranger really, sort of impressed us with its visuals and its action choreography. I thought all of Pacific Rim just blew me away with its action choreography. It did such a great job.
I agree. I mean, the consensus here, see Pacific Rim. If you're the kind of person that everything that we just said, if that sort of stuff turns you on in the movie theater, go see it. It's really one that's worth seeing. And we couldn't stress that more. Joining Pacific Rim this weekend, and we're gonna get into Fast Comic Con is next week. We're gonna tease our most anticipated panel before we talk more about it. Both Sean and I will be on the ground in San Diego, and we'll talk more about Comic Con from Comic Con next week. Grown Ups 2 is coming out in theaters. Also with Pacific Rim this week, and I haven't seen it. Sean sees it tonight. What do you think? Do you think Grown Ups 2 will defeat Pacific Rim? Do you think if it does defeat Pacific Rim, it's the end of the original summer blockbuster?
Yes and no. It'll handily defeat Pacific Rim. And no, I don't think that it's going to be the end of the original blockbuster. I think there'll always be some sort of room for visionaries like Del Toro. And, next year we're going to have a couple of other people, like Elysium's coming later this summer, and that's another original story idea. But, at the same time, there's a mainstream audience that really likes Adam Sandler, that really likes Chris Rock and Kevin James, and they definitely have a following. The first one was a huge hit. Sequels tend to do better than their originals, of course. And so I think people who caught up with Grown Ups either on cable or on DVD, who didn't give it a try in theaters, are going to circle it and say, that's the one I really want to see this summer. I hope it's better than the original. I thought the original had a couple of laughs in it, but you mentioned it as being like sitcom level humor, and it is. But I think that there's definitely a big audience for that. I've heard from enough people who have told me that they can't wait till Grown Ups 2 comes out, that I know that it's I just know it's going to have a huge opening weekend. I like to just believe that these guys are funny. They can be funny. Chris Rock is one of the funniest people on the planet. I hope that he brings an element that makes it a watchable film, because I think sometimes Sandler can get lazy and go for just the cheap laughs. But also I think that's kind of what his audience wants from him. They appreciate his sense of humor.
Yeah, I think in the age of Ted and This Is the End and Horrible Bosses and all of these really hilarious foul-mouthed comedies, I think there's we're kind of missing, I think, an accessible comedy, a comedy where you don't need to go and watch – they don't need to throw out 57 F-bombs in order to make the joke. And the one thing that I do like about these guys is they're all kind of accessible with their comedy. They don't go for the foul-mouthed humor. They go for other stuff. They're all dads. They're all family men. They all know that sort of humor. They all know how to appeal to the family voice out there, the people that don't want, you know, to be berated with F-bombs and curses. And, you know, some of it is potty humor. There is a moose, I think, that urinates on Adam Sandler in the film. But, you know, that kind of physical comedy, that sort of accessible comedy, there's definitely room for it in on the big screen. And Grown Ups 2, as much as some people may kind of make fun of it, may kind of make fun of the humor, I definitely think there's room for it. And I, like you, have friends that are really excited to see it. And I hope it satisfies them. And I hope it gives them something that they're happy that they went and saw.
All right, so next week we're going to be on the ground in San Diego. We're going to have a much more extensive preview of Comic-Con when we get there next week. It officially starts on Thursday, but the preview stuff starts Wednesday. We'll both be there, hopefully podcasting from the different panels at Comic-Con. But if there was let's do one or two panels that are totally justifying the trip to San Diego, like this is why you want to be there, this is the footage you want to see, this is the cast that you want to see early – what are you most looking forward to seeing at San Diego Comic-Con next week?
Well, I know what you're most looking forward to, so I'm not going to pick that one.
Get it out of the way, because it's a big one for both of us. We both want to see Amazing Spider-Man 2. I think it's high, high on our list. We're both big fans of the first one. They're expected to come with some footage. Mark Webb's finished shooting the sequel. They're going to bring Andrew Garfield and Jamie Foxx, and Dane DeHaan is going to be there. And so we both want to see Spider-Man 2, but let's throw that out there. We're dying to see that one. Aside from that, what do you want to see?
My most anticipated is Captain America: The Winter Soldier. That's sharing a panel with Thor: The Dark World, so we're going to see footage from both of those movies. In my opinion, Captain America: The First Avenger is the best superhero movie of this new modern era. I'm talking about Iron Man, Dark Knight, and above, you know, and past that era. I think Captain America: The First Avenger is the one that's been the most successful. It's the one that's honored the character the best, and it's been just the most entertaining to watch. So I'm interested. I'm interested in seeing how they're evolving the Captain America story. I'm curious to see whether the sequel picks up where the last one left off. Once they took director Joe Johnston, you know, who has a deep history with movies like Star Wars and Captain America: The First Avenger felt very much like an Indiana Jones adventure, and I think a lot of that was Joe Johnston. He's not directing this one, so I'm curious to see what the sequel brings with a new vision at the helm, and whether or not it will continue the streak of Captain America on the big screen. So yeah, I'm really antsy to see some footage and to hear from the cast and hear what this film is going to give us and how it's going to kind of evolve that character and evolve the Marvel universe.
If I had to pick a most anticipated panel, it would be a TV panel, and it would be for Breaking Bad on Sunday, because I adore that show more than anything.
Now, Sean, I have to stop you. Don't spoil it, because I am on season 4 now.
Oh gosh!
So let's pretend we don't. You know, people at Fandango, they're not going to buy movie tickets for Breaking Bad. So move on.
Okay, I'm going to go with the 20th Century Fox panel in Hall H on Saturday, because I think that Bryan Singer is going to be there with some X-Men footage. And I think that X-Men Days of Future Past has the potential to be the mutant movie that the fans of that franchise and that character, that series, has been waiting for, because it's going to bridge the existing world of X-Men First Class with the younger versions of Professor X and Magneto with the present day ones, the guys that Singer started with, Hugh Jackman, Ellen Page is going to be there, and she's hopefully going to be the bridge between these two worlds. But it's going to involve some time travel. It's going to involve a story that bridges multiple generations, and it almost feels like doing for the X-Men what the Avengers did, you know, obviously for all these other characters, getting them all on screen, but on a bigger scale, because you're telling stories in two different decades, and you have to find some way to merge them together. And it's bringing Singer back to the cinematic world that he started with. The first two X-Men movies, which I thought were excellent, they had really good tone, they were funny, they had good action sequences to them, and he has all of the tools at his disposal. Almost every cast member came back, from Halle Berry to I mentioned Jackman already. If he comes on to the stage, and I don't think it's confirmed. Have they been confirmed?
No, that's the whole thing with Fox. Fox is the only studio that's a TBD. We don't know what movies they are. But yes, like you say, I mean, The Wolverine comes out July 29th. Right. So it's going to be like the next week after Comic-Con. You have to believe that they're going to bring that movie there. And if they bring that movie there, then they're going to bring the next X-Men as well, and Days of Future Past. So, yeah, I can't imagine –
that would be a huge panel.
Yeah.
I mean, he brought all those people onto the stage at Hall H and then ran footage. They've been filming for a while. He could run some footage.
Oh, they have footage. They definitely have footage.
He could blow the doors off of Hall H by saying – you know, we're taking back the throne because the X-Men sort of kicked it off as an ensemble, and we're going to deliver something massive next summer.
And the most interesting thing about that is I feel like Bryan Singer's X-Men movies come from a different era, you know, of superhero movies. It comes from the Sam Raimi Spider-Man era. It comes from the – you know, it comes from that era, and superhero movies have evolved since then. You know, The Dark Knight, Iron Man, these two movies launched a new era of superhero movies, and with it launched new expectations that the audience has. So I'm curious to see whether or not Bryan Singer can play in both of these eras and how he has adjusted his style of directing to the new era of superhero movies. And so these are all interesting things, and these are things that I hope Fox brings to that panel.
So we'll see. We're going to have a much more in-depth preview of Comic-Con. We're going to have reaction pieces, we think, to Comic-Con panels as they happen. So keep it here with us on our weekly podcast, and we'll do the best we can to convey what's going on in San Diego.
I agree, Sean. Thank you very much. And thank you for listening. And on Fandango right now, I think if you buy your Pacific Rim ticket, you get a download of track from the soundtrack. So that's some incentive to go buy your tickets here at Fandango. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Send your comments, send your love, send anything you want to care packages to me or Sean. We love them. And go out and enjoy your weekend at the movies, everyone.